today on Annenberg Radio News.
If I have to tell the voters that this is a tax increase that we need for whatever the purpose is, I've got much more credibility with them than my opponents do.
We're taking a closer look at the lone Republican running for L.A. mayor. That's Kevin James. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, February 19th, 2013. I'm Graham Clark. Orange County sheriff's officials have identified 20-year-old Ali Syed as the suspect in a series of deadly shootings in Orange County this morning. The shootings left three dead and several injured. The violence began early this morning when a woman was shot dead in the suspect's Ladera Ranch home. Syed is suspected of killing two others in carjackings in Tustin and Santa Ana. Others have reported that they were shot at while driving on the freeway. Syed shot and killed himself when police tried to pull him over in the city of Orange. It's been 1 week since police held a dramatic shootout with murder suspect Christopher Dorner. As Camille Simmons reports, L.A. Police Chief Charlie Beck gave an announcement today.
The LAPD continues talks about Christopher Dorner almost a week after his death. Police Chief Beck spoke in front of a crowded press room this morning about Dorner and the effect his manifesto had on the LAPD and the city of Los Angeles.
I think it's really important that we put this in perspective. And even though much of this is about the discussion of Christopher Dorner, we have to remember the victims.
Phil Tingarides, an LAPD captain, was a chair member of the Board of Rights when it fired Dorner in 2008. Tingarides and his family were targeted in Dorner's manifesto.
When you get a phone call and they tell you that somebody's after your family, it made me sick to my stomach.
The news conference came 3 days after protesters gathered outside of the police department to criticize the LAPD. Protesters said they weren't condoning murder, but were speaking out against police corruption. Connie Rice is a civil rights attorney.
They're not happy that he's killed innocent people, but they are happy that he's refusing to take the abuse of the department.
Beck said the LAPD will continue to investigate Dorner's firing and try to restore the public's confidence in the police department.
It's very important to me that we address this and do what we can to rebuild bridges that have been damaged. If we don't have public confidence, I can't provide public safety.
Chief Beck said the LAPD will make the findings of Dorner's firing investigation public when it's completed. Camille Simmons, Annenberg Radio News.
The L.A. County Board of Supervisors is taking extra steps to address violence in county jails. They held a special meeting this morning with the Citizens Commission on Jail Violence. County Sheriff Lee Baca told the supervisors his department has made some recommended changes. He's hired an assistant sheriff and installed more security cameras. But the sheriff's department says it needs $61 million in additional funding to continue making improvements. Traffic on the streets of L.A. could start moving a little faster. Today, city officials gave the green light for a project aimed at breaking up the gridlock. Cliff Liu has more.
Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa flipped the switch today on the final traffic light control box in the citywide signal synchronization program.
Every single traffic light in the city of Los Angeles is fully synchronized. The only big city over a million in the entire world that has every traffic light synchronized.
Syncing all of LA's traffic lights on the automated traffic surveillance and control system has been an ongoing effort since before the 1984 Olympics. The computer-based traffic signal control system monitors traffic in real time and syncs traffic lights accordingly. Those behind the program say it will result in a 16% increase in travel speed and a 12% decrease in travel time. Here's the mayor again.
That translates into an average of 22 hours and 23 minutes of time savings a year, nearly a day in the lives spent in travel.
That should help people get to where they're going on time. But it didn't work for the mayor, who came half an hour late to today's unveiling. Along with faster travel times comes environmental benefits in a city with 2.5 million registered cars.
We have so many benefits to come from this. Less time idling at intersections, that will help clean the air and reduce our air pollution. And with 12 million plus people on our city streets, that translates into an incredible improvement in air quality.
That was Councilwoman Jan Perry. The LA Department of Transportation says today's synchronization will have the same effect as taking 190,000 cars off the road. Cliff Liu, Annenberg Radio News.
A funeral for Lakers owner Jerry Buss has been scheduled for Thursday at LA Live. Buss died yesterday morning after a long hospitalization for complications from cancer. Buss was 80 years old. Reporter Evan Budrovich explores his USC connections.
Jerry Buss dominated the Los Angeles sports scene, winning 10 NBA titles during his tenure as owner of the Lakers. USC Sports Media Studies professor Jeff Fellinger says Buss was instrumental in creating a greater sporting experience.
I think he had a tremendous influence on culture of sports in Southern California by really positioning the Lakers as the flagship sports franchise.
Jerry Buss can trace his affinity for Los Angeles almost seven decades. He earned a PhD in chemistry from USC in 1957. The man known as Dr. Buss took quite a liking to the Coliseum flair.
I think USC had a very significant influence on his thinking. The college game, the entertainment part of it, bands and song girls, and just the color and pageantry.
Buss made a significant impact outside the confines of professional sports. In 2008, he donated $7.5 million to the USC chemistry department. He was also seen in the classroom teaching many seminars as an inaugural member of the College Board of Counselors. That said, sports fueled his success.
I think he saw the power of the brand of USC football, and you know that there was no reason you couldn't have that at his basketball game.
Buss was an avid supporter of USC athletics, taking numerous trips to the Coliseum to catch the action in his Cardinal and Gold Letterman jacket. Buss died early yesterday morning at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center and is survived by six children and a grieving L.A. sports community. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
A relatively serious bluster is bearing down on Southern California tonight. The National Weather Service warns of snow and freezing rain in the mountains north of L.A. Forecasters expect gusty winds and snow as low as 2,000 feet. Lows will be in the 40s this week and highs will be in the 60s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we'll hear about the possibility of raising the minimum wage in California. The second in our series of mayoral candidate profiles features another long shot seeking his first elected office. Talk radio host Kevin James. He's the only Republican in the race, though he used to be a registered Democrat. But in a solidly blue city, even advancing to the runoff election could be considered victory. Rosalie Murphy has more.
I wouldn't call Kevin James a City Hall outsider. He's more like a watchdog, a longtime Angeleno keeping a careful eye on its policymakers. For more than 6 years, he hosted a talk radio show about politics on KRLA.
Welcome back, Local 870 with Kevin James.
James canceled the show when he started his mayoral run more than a year ago. He spent much of his airtime providing conservative commentary on politics, national and local. He also aired shows about each of the city's neighborhood councils.
I make the rounds.
Yeah, you do.
James doesn't have any direct political experience. He grew up in Texas and Oklahoma, served as an assistant U.S. attorney, then practiced entertainment law in L.A. He also spent 2 years directing AIDS Project Los Angeles. And, if elected, James would be LA's first openly gay mayor. A gay Republican leading a decidedly Democratic city? An ex-prosecutor taking out-of-state campaign funding in a scene dominated by unions and political partnerships? That resume may seem contradictory, but longtime city reporter Ron Kay says it's at least as valuable as one from City Hall.
I think Kevin James has raised the most amount of issues with the best knowledge of what's broken.
Now, that isn't exactly a vote of confidence from Kay.
Nobody, I don't think, has an answer. The closest to it is James, in that he would negotiate and put the unions under pressure, but he's a Republican, and I think he would have a very hard time getting the leverage and support that he needs from everyone else in City Hall.
James talks confidently, though. Like every candidate, he says the city budget is his first priority, and he has a five-year plan that's heavy on the numbers. He would balance the budget with pension reform, tax loophole closures, and increased revenue. By lowering business tax rates, James thinks he'll drive investment during his first term, and he says new companies will bring in enough revenue to eliminate the need for tax increases on individuals. But if it comes down to it, he says he's willing to raise taxes.
Because I am the fiscal conservative in the field, and because my opponents have blown whatever credibility they have on tax increases, if I have to tell the voters that this is a tax increase that we need for whatever the purpose is, I've got much more credibility with them than my opponents do.
James comes across as straightforward. He didn't equivocate when I asked about the controversial decision to allow Walmart to put a store in Chinatown.
I supported it. Community wanted it. I won't say no to any private industry that wants to come in LA. But you know what? Our city needs jobs.
That directness appeals to some voters, like Sherry Bell, a South LA native who attended a recent mayoral forum. She liked Garcetti, too.
Kevin James, I did a good job in today's forum of expressing their specific strategy, because you have to have a plan in order to execute the goals that you're telling the public that you plan to reach.
It's his experience as a talk show host that really sparks his energy, especially the Neighborhood Council series. During our interview, he wrapped his fingers fervently when he described talking directly to the public.
The Neighborhood Councils I kind of fell into and have developed a real appreciation for. If you want to get in and know what is really happening in LA, you go to the neighborhood.
James wants to offer neighborhood councils seats on citywide commissions that will advise him personally. These people are already engaged, and James says it would be a shame not to put their energy toward actual policymaking.
These people are volunteering their time. They're learning city issues, and they're doing it for free because they love their city, they love their neighborhood, and they love their kids, and they love their community. And I don't know a city in the country that has the kind of volunteer and civic engagement that we have in LA.
That really resonates with Collins Osiagetti, who serves on the Silver Lake Neighborhood Council.
The more you get the neighborhood councils involved, the more you get your neighborhoods involved, because this is all about grassroots.
Right.
Because for a long time, it's always felt like there was a dichotomy. The people who make the laws and wear the suits and they make the speeches, and then the people who live the real life.
Journalist Ron Kay sees that too. He thinks James is genuinely interested in the good of all Angelenos because he's been so curious for so many years.
He knows what people are upset about throughout the entire city better than any of the other candidates, because he's been out there not running for office, but looking for news.
James was endorsed by former Republican Mayor Richard Reardon. He's also taken money from big-name out-of-state donors, among them Harold Simmons, a Texas industrialist who's bankrolled conservative campaigns for decades. Another donor is Republican advertiser Fred Davis, who managed media strategy for John McCain in 2008. But the numbers aren't in James's favor. Only 16% of voting Angelenos are Republicans.
And the question is has he been able to convince other constituencies that he's the right man for the job? And I don't know that I see evidence of that.
James may not be able to win the March 5th primary, but he could pull enough votes to influence who advances to May's runoff election. And a strong showing for moderate James in solidly Democratic LA could galvanize the Republican Party nationwide. Rosalie Murphy, Annenberg Radio News.
Visit annenbergradio.org for our profile of candidate Emmanuel Platez. And tune in on Thursday for a close-up of Councilwoman Jan Perry. And remember, today is the last day to register to vote in the March 5th LA city elections. The LA Times recently endorsed Eric Garcetti for mayor. It also criticized the leadership of the LA City Council, the same council Garcetti has led for 6 years. Denise Guerra looks at whether this endorsement will make a difference.
The Times editorial board opened its endorsements describing Los Angeles as an underachieving city, and partly blames the LA City Council for negotiating unaffordable city contracts. But the Times editorial board praised Garcetti's finesse in handling difficult labor negotiations during his 12 years as a member of the LA City Council, 6 of those years serving as the council's president. It also cites his role in the revitalization of Northeast Los Angeles neighborhoods, including Hollywood and Echo Park. In choosing Garcetti, the Times acknowledged there is no obvious superior choice when it comes to the entire pool of candidates, which includes Wendy Gruhl, Jan Perry, Kevin James, and Emmanuel Platez. Rafael Sonnenschein is executive director of the Pat Brown Institute at Cal State Los Angeles. He says the Times has a large enough readership to potentially sway voters.
It's going to reach a certain audience that tends to be a high turnout electorate in city elections. So while the endorsement was not, you know, totally enthusiastic for Garcetti, it sort of talked about his potential to become a very good mayor.
Sonnenschein says that though the LA Times carries a lot of weight with voters, it is just one of a number of important endorsements during this mayoral election.
Former Mayor Reardon has endorsed Kevin James. The Daily News, which has a lot of clout in the Valley, has endorsed Wendy Gruhl. And Gruhl has a number of endorsements from both labor unions and business that at the end of the day can turn out a lot of voters, especially labor. So it's a pretty crowded field of endorsements. The Times does not stand alone.
LA Mayors Antonia Villaraigosa and Tom Bradley were endorsed by the Times during their mayoral run. Denise Guerra, Annenberg Radio News.
Perhaps you've already grown sick of the Harlem Shake, a song by a producer named Bauer. It's taken the internet by storm in the last few days, inspiring a viral YouTube dance craze. I sat down with one of USC's media experts to learn more.
My name is Kevin Driscoll. Previously, I was a student at MIT where I wrote a master's thesis about dance crazes. Now I'm a PhD candidate.
How much time per day do you spend on YouTube?
Especially when I was writing about Crank That Soulja Boy, I must have watched like 500 or more variants.
Did this sort of phenomenon begin with Soulja Boy in your grand
narrative?
That's
one way to look at it. There's kind of like a revival in the dance craze as a pop form in the beginning of this century. It became a lot easier to distribute videos really widely. That would be around 2006 or so. The kind of Soulja Boy style dance crazes were really still coming into their own in 2008.
What has changed since then? I mean, what is going on right now that's different about the Harlem Shake compared to Soulja Boy or the Gangnam Style?
The crucial difference between the kind of Crank That Soulja Boy period and the Harlem Shake is how much behind-the-scenes architecture has been built out to create an economy around viewing and sharing these videos. The phenomenon is still like dispersed and decentralized, as popular culture always is. The money side of it is now centralized into one kind of bucket. The thing with the Harlem Shake is that the content ID system that's built into YouTube allows Mad Decent, which is the record label, to kind of claim ownership of the soundtrack of all these other remix videos that get made. So they can choose to shut it down, which is kind of like a remote kill, or what is happening now for Harlem Shake, claim ownership and then put an ad on it and they can get a little bit of money from it. They have used their option to kill remotely, but only with other people who are kind of like industry players. There is like this tension between the authority of this original artist and clearly all of the creative act and energy that's happening for all of the thousands of people making their own versions of the video. The cool thing about the Harlem Shake is getting to see people just like go nuts with their friends.
Thank you for speaking with us about the Harlem Shake.
Thanks a lot.
The 21st Annual Art of Motion Picture Costume Design exhibit is on display at the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising Museum today, showcasing all of the Oscar-nominated costumes. Jerome Campbell spoke with the fashion designer Nick Veriose about what it takes to score a nomination.
This year's nominations for Best Costume range from an extravagant rooster feather cloak to a 19th century suit and top hat, with a dung beetle dress thrown into the mix. There is not a common thread that runs through these costume choices, but fashion designer Nick Vario says that this year's nominations are strong candidates because they can tell a story on their own.
You want to tell a story through the costume. You may not know who just walked in, but you sure as heck can judge that this is somebody important, for example, especially this cloak, as you say, this coat worn by Charlize Theron as Ravina, and you can see that this one's a diva. You know, this is no simpleton. Ravina's character is not a wallflower. She commands the room.
The extravagance of the coat that Charlize Theron wore in Snow White mirrors many of the fantastical qualities of many of the other nominees, which include Anna Karenina, Mirror Mirror, Snow White, Les Mis, and Lincoln.
It gets a nomination because of the fact that it's historically correct. And the costumes are so important to the film. We have visions of what Lincoln looked like. So you better bring on that top hat. you better bring on that long coat that makes them even look longer.
The Academy has rewarded accuracy many times before, but Vario says that there is no clear-cut frontrunner.
Either fantasy will be picked or historical correctness, as in Lincoln, you know, would be picked. So it'll be very interesting. He'll get the nod this year for the best costume design.
That magical quality may still elude the viewer, but anyone can appreciate the beauty of the costume. Jerome Campbell, Annenberg Radio News.
A play by the theater troupe Company of Angels tackles issues that black women face in society today. It's called Black Women's State of the Union Taking Flight. Jillian Baker sat down with the cast and crew for a behind-the-scenes look of the production.
Black Women's State of the Union is a play within plays, a series of stories that tackle the tough issues black women face in society. The all-African-American, predominantly female cast sheds light on black women's trials and tribulations through laughter, sorrow, joy, and tears. It's not easy for the cast and crew of Black Women's State of the Union to address these personal or often overlooked topics, but to many, like co-producer Michelle Flowers, that tricky subject matter can help spark bigger conversations in the black community.
Historically, we're at a critical time in our history, you know, in terms of political leadership. We see more black women in political leadership. We see more creative and entrepreneurial black women doing exceptional things. But these are things we've worked so hard to achieve, and we have to work hard to maintain these things.
It's a point of view that co-producer and director Keela Kitu also shares.
It's that state of a potential. We aren't flying. We aren't on the ground. We are just taking flight and exploring where we are in that context.
No topic is left ignored in Black Women's State of the Union. Actresses wage war on everything from beauty and love, skin color, and self-hatred. The actresses often find certain pieces within the play that speak to them in different ways. Sometimes, this personal connection allows the actress to better portray certain emotions on stage. But for actress Tamika Simpkins, the personal connection goes even further. Her performances are not only powerful for the audience, they're also powerful for her as an artist.
Art is supposed to do, it's supposed to take you on this journey, not only for the audience, but as the artist, and sometimes show you things that we can't see in ourselves that God and the universe intends for us to see.
Nearly every actress feels some sort of personal connection to the stories in Black Women's State of the Union. For actress and co-producer Lonier Perrine, that story is I Don't Want to Be, a story about a mother's loss and suffering, exacerbated by the murders of Emmett Till and Trayvon Martin. Perrine is a new mother, and thoughts of her child drive her performance.
You know, my son is 2.5, and every time I look at him, I have those feelings, oh my God, what if something happens to him? Or what if that situation that happened to Trayvon happens to him? You know, and it's something that, you know, we talked about earlier that you can't ignore, so that piece for me resonates deeply.
Messages of beauty and self-esteem appear throughout Black Women's State of the Union. It's a topic that, for many black women, remains difficult to ignore in the 21st century. Co-producer Lee Sherman believes that ignoring these issues of representation can cause more harm than good.
I think because there is still the Eurocentric standard of beauty as the standard of beauty, that black women are still feeding into that standard of beauty and feeling that our natural beauty is not enough. But I think as long as those media images are out there, there are going to be some of us that are still striving for that beauty.
You can catch Black Women's State of the Union Taking Flight at Company of Angels from February 19th through February 24th. Jillian Baker, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we're checking in with Chaya Nene to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Chaya.
Hello. Coming up at 6 on ATVN, updates on the Tustin shooting rampage, reaction to death of Lakers legend Jerry Buss, and information about a new charter school that opened its doors today.
Thank you for that. If you're planning a trip to Disneyland soon, you may be looking at higher prices. The theme park told the OC Register that it will no longer offer special discounted tickets for Southern California residents. Two-for-one ticket deals and park hopper passes will also be discontinued. A one-day adult ticket for the happiest place on earth costs $87. Keep clicking on our website, annenbergradio.org, for more news about South Los Angeles. Today we'll have a look at minimum wage in California from reporter James Centinelli, who happens to be celebrating his 21st birthday today. That's it for this Tuesday. I'm Graham Clark.
Thank you.